Union University presents Faculty Focus, a series of podcasts illuminating the benefits of academic research leave. Faculty members at Union are awarded research leaves that vary in length from a semester to a full academic year. These concentrated studies frequently result in new publications and updated material for classroom teaching, but each experience is unique. Join us now as we document and showcase another research leave experience at Union University.
This is Mark Kaler from Union University, and I am joined by Dr. Gavin Richardson, who is an associate professor of English here at Union. Dr. Richardson, thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure.
It's great to have you here. We're talking about faculty research leave, and Dr. Richardson recently completed one of those leaves. If you could just give us an idea, first of all, of what you did during that time, some of the research you were able to accomplish.
Well, I did a lot of things, but let me just kind of focus on one. The research leave gave me an opportunity to finish up a project that I've been working on for quite some time about a Roman coin that I was working on. This particular coin was minted in the 4th century by the sons of Constantine, Constans and Constantius II. And the reverse of this coin shows a soldier leading a child by the hand, and no one has really been able to satisfactorily explain exactly what the significance of this reverse type is. And I suggested that it was an allusion to a passage in Virgil's Aeneid. The Aeneid tells of the legendary founding of Rome by Aeneas. And I argue that the soldier leading the child from this hut on the back of the coin is actually an allusion to Aeneas leading his son Ascanius from a burning Troy. Or I suggest that the iconography has something to do with the Aeneid. So, and that was just published in a classics journal called Vergilius.
It's a very extensive article. I had a chance to look at it. You were kind enough to send it to me, and I was very impressed with the level of documentation and the detail in there. There's a great deal of information. How long did it take you to assemble all of that?
Honestly, it was a couple of years. You know, it's a 20, 25-page article, and you might not think it took years to produce, but it really did.
I would.
Yeah. And it actually is the result of the success of two programs at Union. One is the Pew Summer Research Program, which basically funds a summer off. And I applied for that a couple of years ago, and I did the spade work for this project during that summer. And then I had the research leave last semester, and that gave me the time to really polish it and finish it off, because I sent off the article. It got accepted right as I was beginning my research leave, and I had the luxury of time just to sit and finish that and revise it according to the editor's suggestions and secure the permission for images, et cetera, and get that thing out.
Mm-hmm. Now, I would think there's a great deal to be learned just looking at a civilization's coinage.
Mm-hmm.
And I've often wondered what people 1,000 years from now will think of the United States, what they'll think were our priorities. What kind of a window does this give us into that time?
Well, if you think about coins in the ancient world, it's a great way to issue your propaganda if you're the emperor, because news travels slowly and communication is problematic. But if everybody had an image of the emperor, for example, or the kinds of ethics and values that the emperor wanted to foster in his empire, if everybody had coins celebrating that, then the emperor could sort of set the tone for his empire. This particular coin that I worked on had the reverse legend, Fel Temp Reparatio, which basically is an abbreviation for the restoration of happy times, the sense that Rome is being renewed under Constans and Constantius II. And it's a celebration of that. But other 4th century coins depict Roman soldiers spearing barbarians, suggesting that Rome is still powerful. In fact, the legends and the propaganda on the reverse of Roman coins gets more shrill in the 4th century as Rome deteriorates, suggesting a greater anxiety about controlling the images and the thoughts about the empire in the 4th century.
We have Dr. Gavin Richardson with us, associate professor of English. And even though you are an English professor, a lot of history here as well. The two are sort of intertwined, aren't they?
Well, the interesting thing about my interest in these coins, the interest comes from being a coin collector myself, but also travels in Italy that I embarked on a couple of years ago leading a study tour, because I was sitting in Venice in the Basilica San Marco, and I'm seeing images of the harrowing of hell, the Anastasis, as it's called in the Byzantine tradition, where Christ is liberating people, drawing them out from hell. And the image seemed familiar to me, and I recognized it. I recognized that I wasn't seeing that image of the Anastasis. I was thinking about this Roman coin in which the soldier leads the child from the hut, and the implication is that the soldier is leading the barbarian child into Romanitas, you know, into the Roman Empire, and all that entails. But I think even those Byzantine mosaicists were calling upon this iconographical tradition that is represented in the coin that goes all the way back to Virgil's Aeneid, actually. And in terms of future research, I may look at later reflexes of this iconographical tradition, looking at it in religious art.
Interesting, too, in reading through your essay, that you said that different stations in the Roman Empire, obviously they got the direction to use this, mm-hmm. but they interpreted that in slightly different ways, and there are some pretty obvious variations in the different places in which they were minted.
Yeah, there's a whole website devoted to the way that on the reverse type, there's a tree, and there is a website devoted to all the different trees that are represented, or the way that the child is dressed, or the way that the soldier is dressed, the position of the spear. So people kind of wonder, and we're not exactly sure how the central instructions for minting were issued, but it's clear that there are variations in Antioch that differ from the variations in Thessalonica, which differ from Heraclea. I mean, this coin was minted at something like 16 mints all throughout the Roman Empire, and each has a different style. So it's pretty interesting to get a sense of local color and local styles from each of these coins.
Local capabilities, too. I guess some were able to do more than others.
The die engravers in Antioch are superb. You could really tell a coin from Antioch, just in terms of the drapery folds of the emperor, the kinds of detail that they engrave with. Other die engravers aren't so skilled, but the ones in Antioch are superb, and you can always tell an Antioch coin.
Hmm. How did this research leave benefit you as a scholar, as a professor here at Union?
I don't think you can overestimate the importance of time for a project like this. Time to read, time to think, time to digest. And, we who work at Union here are blessed to be at Union, and we have, I love my students, I love my classroom, and I love teaching. But it's nice to have a protected block of time to think these thoughts, to work out, to chase dead ends, to do the massive amount of reading it takes to produce high quality scholarship, and the university enables a couple of scholars a year to be able to have this time, and you can't overestimate the importance of that.
How much reading did you have to do for something like this?
I couldn't quantify it.
Tough to say.
Yeah, and the tough thing about publishing in the classics is that not everything's written in English. So, mm-hmm. I had German for reading knowledge in grad school, but I had to, hunt and peck my way through a German article or two to make sure that I've done my homework and cover my bases if I'm going to put that name out there and put that article out there in a classics journal. People are going to be reading it and making judgments about me as a scholar, so I need to make sure that I cover those bases. So I couldn't quantify how much reading goes into that, and that's another reason why protected amount of time is so necessary.
How long were you out?
I was out a semester.
So it's a semester.
Yeah, but I have to say that I probably began this project in 2004.
So it was one of those things that you really needed some concentrated time and effort to wrap it up, but you had a lot of the work already finished.
That's exactly right. I did a lot of work in my Pew summer research leave, and then when I got the fall research leave, I was able to finally put the finishing touches on it and get it on out.
Gavin Richardson, Associate Professor of English, joining us to talk about his faculty research leave. What are the next steps, do you think, to further develop the ideas or the contributions here, and do you think – there is research that other scholars will build on, take your work and build on as well.
Well, there's a fellow by the name of Bill Welch who specializes in studying these coins, and there really hasn't been a major article on these coins in decades. And so actually I consulted Bill in putting together this essay, and so I think it's going to be of particular interest to the collecting community to at least read what I have to say, read my argument about this. I don't expect to convince everybody about it, but I think folks are going to be able to think about this coin in new ways. In terms of future research, well, about this coin itself, I may talk about ways in which this iconography has later reflexes in, for example, the Byzantine depiction of Christ harrowing hell. I think it owes to this iconography. But a scholar in the early 1970s made a similar argument. I still like to do some further research about that.
Are there other schools of thought that would be different than yours on this, how it originated and that kind of thing?
Well, this coin was minted along with three others in this series, the Fel Tempor Reparatio series, the Renewal of Happy Times. One depicts a soldier on a ship being guided by the goddess Victory. Another depicts a phoenix on top of a pyre, P-Y-R-E. Another version of this coin, or a coin minted along with it, depicts a Roman soldier spearing a barbarian. And some have argued that any kind of explanation of this coin has to sort of take into account the other three coins and how it functions with respect to these other three coins. You know, is there a unified image among these four, or a unified message among these four coins? And my explanation really doesn't do that. I sort of treat this coin in isolation, and so I think some folks will ask questions about, you know, how my argument relates to the other three. I have a philosophical difference in that I don't think it has to.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Dr. Gavin Richardson, Associate Professor of English at Union University, thank you so much for joining us and sharing with us some of the work that you did during your faculty research.
My
leave.
Pleasure.
Thank
my
you
pleasure.
Very much.
You've been listening to Faculty Focus, a production of Union University in Jackson, Tennessee. Union integrates top-tier academics with Christ-centered learning in more than 100 fields of study. Union University, excellence-driven, Christ-centered, people-focused, future-directed.